In this ASI cast, Richard Marks talks to Nigel Wally, Chief Executive of the Decipher Consultancy, about the session he'll be chairing at this year's International Television and Video Conference in Athens. He left Nice last year encouraged by the progress the industry had made, addressing the challenges presented by OTT and new content players, and is looking forward to taking a fresh look at where we are currently. With most of the converging technologies having, well, converged, one of the tasks ahead is to find the language to pick our way through the changes and opportunities that now open up for us.
Okay, well, regular listeners to the podcast will probably recognise Nigel from past editions. This is an interesting one because it's the first time we've had Nigel on as a session chair, and he'll be overseeing our session on technology, content and innovation at the upcoming event in Athens. So just rewinding quickly to last year's event in Nice, Nigel, what were your main takeaways from the event, the themes, the presentations, the rows and the arguments that really stick in your mind?
Obviously, the rows and the arguments are fun, but I came away very positive about the industry, particularly this notion that we were, as an industry, getting our head round how to deal with some of the new challenges from OTT and from new players. I think we've been scrabbling around for a couple of years trying to work out solutions, and there were some presentations, particularly the Nielsen one, which showed there was both a technical methodology that we as an industry could start adopting, but also we were beginning to get the language right, that we were, as an industry, we were able to put some of the new viewing formats and viewing patterns into a broader TV industry context. Still lots of work to do, so hopefully this year, particularly in the session I'm chairing, we'll be able to kind of take on some of those things. But I did walk away very encouraged from Nice.
Well, the Brian Furrier's paper did win Best Paper, which was presented in that session last year, and we've got him back. I know, exchanging emails with him, that they found out an awful lot more, that they felt they were just scratching the surface in last year's presentation about how people are using SVOD, and particularly the Netflix platform. Were you surprised by any of the results? I know a lot of people were quite shocked at the amount of viewing that was happening almost instantaneously with things being put up on Netflix, which almost made you think that people largely do still want to try and watch things as quickly as possible.
I was surprised. I'm always cautious about taking results from the US market and extrapolating insight to other markets, because it is such a unique market, and Netflix is actually quite a different beast over there. A lot of the SVOD players are a very different beast over there. The platforms outside of the major conurbations, where you have quite sophisticated platforms like Comcast X1 or those, most of the cable platforms out in the main parts of the States are still quite poor. So Netflix is very much a platform competitor out there, and has a much stronger role in the TV world than we're anticipating in Europe. So I think there's a lot of insight in Brian's presentation. I think we have to be very careful about extrapolating broader industry insight from the US. I was more intrigued by the technical capability, but you know, from what they achieved.
Yeah, definitely. What are you hoping to get from your session in Athens specifically? What are the big themes relating to technology, content and innovation? I know you're going to be kicking off the session with your own overview of what's going on. I don't want to preempt that too much, but what do you think are the big obsessions, as it were, that we'll be examining in Athens?
Anyone who knows me knows I'm kind of the chief industry pedant in terms of terminology and definitions. But I do think from a research industry point of view, we have to be very tight on them. And I'm really excited because it feels like there's going to be a lot of good questioning about how we define what we're seeing in front of us. I'm going to start off with a piece, again, questioning definitions of viewing, definitions of technology, and in particular, the distinction, which I don't think we make strongly enough, between user and audience viewing contexts. You know, most of us in the room will be from a research industry heritage that comes from traditional TV audience group viewing contexts. And a lot of the exciting tech we're seeing comes from a Silicon Valley perspective, which is very strong on celebrating the user and the individual and the single user screen.
Mm.
And what we're seeing is a really interesting clash of technologies. As technologies converge, our understandings of viewing behaviors are having to change. And that's going to be really interesting just to see that. So a lot of the sessions in that morning will be saying, looking at who's viewing, how are we defining who's viewing, and how are we measuring it. So I still think we have some way to go in terms of definitions as these two industries come colliding together. This is the more interesting end of convergence. It's almost as though the tech convergence thing is kind of a done deal. Most TV platforms contain some kind of broadcast, some kind of IP, so that the tech stuff has come smashing together, and it's now us poor researchers who are having to kind of rework our language and rework our processes to understand it. But it's pretty decent.
Well, it's funny you should mention that, because we have got a podcast in the pipelines exactly on that topic of definitions. So stay tuned for that. It's interesting you mentioned the clash of cultures, because I still do get the feeling that Silicon Valley has this idea of the average TV viewers being, and I'm going to show my age, like that guy from the Maxell ads in the 80s, you know, sat on a sofa on his own with this huge technology array in front of him, as opposed to, you know, a lot of viewing being done by families from all sorts of different angles and all sorts of compromises being made. I mean, voice recognition strikes me as one of those areas where it hasn't exactly been teased out how voice recognition would work in a family situation, if you see what I mean, with if people are fighting for control of the remote, then what happens if people are having an argument about what to watch using voice control? That could make quite an interesting Gogglebox episode.
And we're seeing two or three different approaches to that arrive. So if you look at what the big platforms like Comcast in the US, Sky in the UK are doing with voice, it's actually subtly different to what Amazon and Google are doing with Alexa and Google Home. They come at it still from this kind of single voice context. Alexa's done better work in combining more voices, but it still assumes there are accounts logged into the system, whereas the TV industry ones don't. So they seem to be much better at broadly recognizes any voice in the room and allowing you access to the TV search and recommendations. So it's interesting to kind of tease out the differences. But more interestingly, I think, with voice is whether it will change the way we understand television brands. And I'm hoping on the session in Athens, we'll be able to tease some of this out, because we're beginning to see voice affect journeys towards content. So, you know, are people jumping straight towards program titles as opposed to traveling through channel propositions? And some of those kind of questions will be the questions probably the research industry that's in the room will be looking at over the next two or three years.
I know in your session we've got a speech from the BBC from Santanu Chakrabarty looking at their challenges around keeping the BBC brand, not just from voice, but also when your content is repurposed for social media, chopped up, put into little 10-second snippets and generally spread around. How do you actually, you know, maintain the attribution, the credit for having produced that content in the first place? So that's going to be an interesting one.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that session, because I think the BBC, more than anyone, have highlighted this problem that they expanded the number of brands they had during the expansion of digital channels. So we went from having a simple BBC One and Two world with the BBC blocks back in the day to suddenly have the BBC having probably 10 or 11 different brands operating in TV. So when they talk about attribution, the question for them is always, which brand are we attributing content back to? Is that amazing program a BBC One program? Is it a BBC Sport program? Is it a BBC, just general BBC program? So I think not only do they have this battle where they're trying to maintain attribution, but they're having their own internal battle about which brand to attribute stuff to. So.
I was also at a radio industry conference. It wasn't a research event, more of a sort of program maker and producer conference called Next Radio, and there they were talking a lot about, I'd heard the word, but not in that context, sonics, the importance of sonics. This is the the audio brand, you know, like the going back to the, you know, that Intel noise that they insisted was on every advert, or the McDonald's jingle or whatever, but keeping that consistent for audio brands. So you get the consistency of attribution to the content, but also the number of radio advertisers that aren't necessarily using audio branding, which, as you'd mentioned earlier, with the increase in the use of voice for search and content discovery, that's going to become even more important, I guess.
Yeah, it's an interesting factor about branding, whether it's TV program branding or channel branding or even just product branding. Only a small number of brands seem to have gone down the road of including kind of sonic IDs, but it's starting to pop up as an issue on TV. I'm not sure if there's anyone who's done it really well yet on TV. So it'd be good to see if any case studies pop up.
Definitely. Yeah. Looking more widely, I mean, focusing very much on your session, but looking at the conference as a whole, I don't know what chance you've had to look through the program in your busy daily life so far, but what other topics are you hoping to hear about, and what other topics do you think are standing out as being important this year?
I think a kind of a related topic is about addressability, which seems to be this kind of the hot buzzword at the moment around TV. Because behind addressability, there's the broader question about how we use artificial intelligence and recommendations in TV. So we clearly, you know, my big interest is any theme where we see technology crashing into an up till now technology stable industry. Addressability is one of those ones where there's an awful lot of misinformation going on in the industry. We've just done a piece of work with brand clients, and there was actually quite a lot of anger about the feeling of being misled about capabilities of addressability in TV and misuse of terminology. So I'm interested in how we discuss not just using tech to monitor and understand behavior, but actually how we're using tech to drive differences in behavior. We've seen lots of the TV platforms across Europe talk about investing in artificial intelligence and how they're going to use that intelligence to create better propositions for TV customers. It falls again in starting into this trap of if we are addressing TV differently to different audience segments, how we do that in where we have group viewing, pair viewing, couples viewing, singles viewing, and the array of different devices we use. And again, I sense that we're an industry still struggling with terminology and definitions in this end of it as well. So to me, this is always a complement piece to better behavior research, which is researching the front end proposition construction using computer data. So I'd be interested to see if anyone brings any insight into that. I'll be touching a little bit on addressability in the setup I do for the innovation session, just looking at how we define what's possible in addressability in various different user contexts. So I'll be raising it slightly, but I'm going to be looking for anything from around the world that we can gives us a little light into how this stuff can be used properly.
You mentioned sort of anger from the advertisers. Is that the capabilities of addressability they felt had been over-egged, and it was just basically, you know, demographics and region largely when you come across addressable, or was it some other issue they had with how it had been missold?
I think over-egging is a polite phrase to describe what they're encountering. And the people we spoke to used less polite phrases. I think that whenever there is a new wave of tech, there is very often a tendency for it to be led by the salespeople and agencies who go out and promise the earth, which isn't necessarily deliverable. And I think we've had that first wave of tech companies and software companies who've managed to wire various things together, and I've pronounced the future of addressable TV. But as we know, you know, I'm as we kind of fall back into being these sage oldies in the TV industry, we know that a lot of these things very often don't come to fruition, or viewers aren't interested. And I think addressable TV, the idea that we can create unique content and advertising propositions for individuals and individual audiences, has always been one of those nirvanas out there. It conflicts with our desire to create national audiences around big moments on TV. Mm. And so I think that we're at a period again where some tech has been created, and the rest of the industry now needs to pause and reflect on what could and what should work.